Up until the late 1980s, the Wyricks were a normal family. They were tight-knit, loving, and dealt with the standard worries of any young family. But all that changed when they moved into their first purchased home, on Wint Loop in Harris County, Georgia. It was here that things began to spiral out of control when the couple's eldest daughter, Heidi, began speaking with imaginary friends and being haunted by a shadowy, mysterious figure who harmed the family and spread chaos. So, just what exactly happened to the Wyrick family, and who was this cloaked figure? We aim to explore these questions and more as we examine the life and hauntings of Heidi Wyrick and her family. The creepy marathon month has begun, everybody. So light a candle, hit those lights, sit back, and enjoy. Lisa Wyrick was just 17 when she gave birth to her first daughter, Heidi, in 1986. The process had been grueling and complicated, more so than most births, as Lisa had to undergo a C-section when doctors discovered that her baby was in distress, her umbilical cord wrapped around her neck. But it wasn't just that which made the birth unusual. According to Lisa, after her operation, as she drifted in and out of consciousness, she was visited by a tiny, weathered black woman who told her that her baby was going to have powers, powers that ordinary people did not have. She added that Heidi had been born with a veil on her face, and that she wouldn't be blinded to the other side. But when Lisa awoke, no one, not hospital staff, nor her husband Andy, had seen this frail woman. They assumed she had simply been dreaming, and thought nothing further of it. Lisa was the youngest of six children. By the time she became a teenager, her older siblings had left home, and she was effectively treated as an only child. She was brought up in a God-fearing, Christian, conservative household with her parents' values instilled in her from the time she could talk. She had met Andy in her teen years, and the pair married young, planning to introduce their own children to their shared faith. Following Heidi's birth, the couple moved into a house on Swint Loop in Ellerslie, Harris County, Georgia. Formerly an antebellum plantation, it was discovered by Lisa's parents, who felt with a little TLC, it could be a great family home, consisting of three bedrooms with a brick exterior. The house had lain in disrepair for some time after the former tenants abandoned it for unknown reasons, and it was scheduled to be auctioned off just days after Lisa's parents had stumbled across it. The family were lucky, their low bid was accepted, and while still in their teens, the couple had become homeowners. Heidi's first interaction with the ghosts of the house on Swint Loop came in February of 1989. Shortly after the family moved into the Harris County residence, Andy had brought home a puppy for his daughter, whom she'd named Wolf. One day, Heidi went out into the garden to play. Dressed in a thick coat and knitted hat, she stepped out into the cold winter air and scanned the garden for Wolf, but she couldn't see him. The three-year-old called on her puppy, but he didn't come running. She tried a second time and snapped her fingers. Still nothing. Wolf was a well-trained dog. He always came when he was called on. He wasn't in the doghouse, Heidi soon learned, and she called out for him again. "Where are you, Wolf?" She thought she'd heard a yip coming from beneath the house, and so unfazed, Heidi dropped to her knees to peer underneath the decking. She called out, "Wolf," and then spotted a pair of yellow eyes. She tried to coax the canine out, speaking softly and slowly, but the puppy wouldn't move. Instead, scratching at the dirt, she reached a hand out, and Wolf snapped at her fingers. A low growl escaped his throat, and his ears perked up, as if he was listening intently. A moment later, the fur on the back of his neck bristled. Heidi turned her neck, sensing that somebody was nearby. Next to her, she noticed a pair of shiny black shoes. She straightened up and stared up at the tall man, who had suddenly appeared in her garden. The man greeted her, aware of her name, but she simply stared at him. "Your name is Heidi, isn't it?" he asked. Heidi confirmed that he was correct. The man explained that his name was Mr. Gordy, and he used to live around here. He told her, "I have a swing on that old tree over there." He pointed to the next door neighbor's garden. The child's eyes lit up at the mention of a swing, and he offered to show her it and let her swing on it one day, stating, "I'll push you real high." Heidi was overjoyed at the idea, but told Mr. Gordy she would need her mother's permission. Mr. Gordy reassured the young girl that he wanted to be her friend and that there was nothing for her to be afraid of. She replied that she wanted to be his friend too. She then asked if he wanted to see her puppy, and when she squatted down to call Wolf, then stood up again, the man was no longer there. She wandered around the garden calling for him, but he was gone. When Lisa called her daughter in for lunch that afternoon, she did not expect Heidi to tell her that she'd made a new friend, let alone an adult man. Lisa, who always had one eye on her child, couldn't believe what she was hearing. She asked Heidi what she was talking about. Nobody had been on the property except for the two of them. The three-year-old explained that Mr. Gordy was a nice man who offered to push her on his swing. She added that he told her he wasn't a bad man. Lisa chastised her daughter for talking to strangers, but Heidi stated that she liked Mr. Gordy and that he wasn't going to hurt her. She described him as an elderly gentleman with white hair, a top hat, and a black suit. Lisa couldn't tell if Heidi was being serious or not. So far, the three-year-old had never had imaginary friends and didn't simply make up lies. She felt the account was too detailed to be false, and Lisa worried in horror if someone had attempted to abduct her baby. In sheer panic, the mother of one locked the windows and doors, drew the curtains, and reached for a kitchen knife. Then she called Andy and asked him to come home. Heidi told her mother that Mr. Gordy promised to come back and push her on the swing. At home, Andy retrieved his shotgun and headed out into the back garden, determined to find this Mr. Gordy. But walking around the neighborhood failed to procure answers. Nobody knew of anyone with the surname Gordy. The man was a total stranger to the locals. The bizarreness of the day didn't end there, however. Heidi's toy train, which she had been begging her parents to fix as the batteries were dead, suddenly began working of its own accord, chugging across the child's bedroom carpet with its whistle blowing. Unable to believe their eyes, Andy and Lisa wondered what was going on inside their home. Heidi's next meeting with the stranger was just months later when she was playing with her cousin Brooke. There was a soft tapping at the front door, and the young girl instructed her cousin to get Lisa. But Brooke wasn't listening, so Heidi opened the door herself. On the other side of the screen door stood a man with a bloody bandage on his left arm, which he held to his chest. His white t-shirt was covered with blood. Heidi asked the stranger if he was okay, and he replied, "I am now," with a friendly smile. Heidi was not alarmed by the situation, and in fact felt safe in the man's presence, despite his bloody wound. She asked him how he got hurt, and he told her in an accident that occurred a long time ago. He introduced himself as Con, and told her he'd been waiting a long time to speak with her. But then blood seeped from his bandage, and Heidi suddenly became alarmed, likely thinking he needed medical attention. She told him she'd get her mother, and ran off, calling for Lisa and gasping, "Con's hurt." But when she pulled her mother to the front door, Con was gone. Lisa considered the possibility that Con was Mr. Gordy's first name. The only thing that confused her was her daughter's descriptions of the two men. Mr. Gordy was white-haired, elderly, and sharply dressed. Con, on the other hand, was younger and wore khakis and a t-shirt. Andy suggested that their daughter might be making it all up, but Lisa wasn't convinced. As Heidi enrolled in nursery, Lisa took up a part-time job, which allowed her to collect her daughter after school, as she didn't want her to be left as an after-school club. Heidi continued to talk about Mr. Gordy and Con, and had taken to spending more time in her room, where she claimed Mr. Gordy visited her, although sometimes she was simply reading or sketching alone. Lisa didn't like how withdrawn Heidi seemed. She'd never been a loner. She was outgoing and liked to spend time with her family. Sometimes Heidi would even take an extra plate of lunch into her room for her guest, though it would always remain untouched. The behaviour change made Lisa uncomfortable, and she scheduled an appointment with the young girl's doctor. The doctor, however, found nothing physically wrong with Heidi and assured Lisa that her daughter would let go of imaginary friends once she made more real-life friends. It was perfectly normal and healthy. Still, Lisa's sense of relief was temporary. A few mornings later, she overslept, and after jumping out of bed, she woke Heidi and went for a brief shower. When she got out, Heidi was ready to go and sitting on her bed. As Lisa plugged in the hairdryer, she noticed the temperature in the room dropped drastically and shivered. She asked her daughter if it was cold or if it was just her, but Heidi wasn't listening, instead staring behind Lisa's left shoulder. "There's a man right behind you." These words sent chills down Lisa's spine. She asked her daughter if it was Mr. Gordy. Heidi replied, "No, Mr. Gordy is not black." Lisa pressed further. Who was this man? Did she know him? Had she seen him before? "Yes, I think he likes your bedroom." When Lisa finally turned around, there was no one there, but she was shaken enough to report Mr. Con Gordy to the local sheriff's office, although nothing was ever found. In June of 1990, Lisa's divorced sister Joyce moved into the house next door with her two teenage children. It was here that she came across some documents from a previous owner, a man with the surname Gordy. Shocked by the discovery, Joyce asked one of the former tenants who had grown up in the house about the man. The former resident recalled Mr. Gordy as a grandfather to all the neighborhood children. He loved kids and was always dressed in a dark suit and top hat. He owned a real estate company in Columbus and had been a Sunday school superintendent at Ellison Methodist Church. There are mixed reports, however, about his time of death and his first name. Unsolved Mysteries claim James Gordy died in 1974, while the Vale Heidi Weirich story, which is written by Joyce herself, that William Gordy died in 1972. It's unclear why there is such a discrepancy here. After discovering the true identity of Mr. Gordy, Joyce went to Lisa with what she knew. The mother of one was, understandably, shocked at the idea that her child was communicating with the dead. She hated the notion and felt awful for her little girl, noting how disturbing the idea was. Joyce added that at least Heidi was unaware that they were deceased, and she seemed unbothered by their visits. Increasingly during her childhood, Lisa had also seen strangers who were not there, although she argued that at least she had never interacted with them, unlike Heidi. But while one mystery had been solved, others remained. Who was Con? Who was the mysterious black man seen in Lisa's room? And why did they all want to interact with Heidi? Over the course of the next few months, more and more strange events unfolded. In one instance, Andy entered the kitchen and spotted Wolf crouched near the kitchen table. He was gnarling viciously, his lips curled back, baring his long, pointed teeth. He glared intensely at something Andy couldn't see, his yellow eyes never leaving that one spot in the room. Andy asked what it was and patted the dog's head, but Wolf continued to growl. Stepping further into the kitchen, Andy felt a chill come over him. His heart pumped furiously and his spine tingled. He felt like someone was watching him, but there was no one there. One day following the discovery of Mr. Gordy's identity, Lisa went outside to do some gardening, leaving Heidi indoors and watching television on her own. As she giggled at her favorite children's show, she suddenly became aware of something being wrong. She turned and saw a figure in the living room, and panic and fear promptly set in. As she opened her mouth to scream, a pillow was forced across her face. Heidi flailed her small body and panicked, struggling to remove the pillow. A moment later, her limbs began to feel heavy. Then the pillow was gone, and she gasped for air. With enough energy in her system and enough air in her lungs, she began to scream. Andy and Lisa, both of whom had been doing garden work, ran into the house. Heidi was in a corner of the sofa, blankets pulled up around her, and terror written all over her face. Her cheeks were tear-stained, red and blotchy, and her hair was in damp, matted strings. She told her parents that a man put a pillow over her face and she couldn't breathe. She asked them to make him go away and leave her alone. Andy ran to the back door, believing initially that his child was assaulted by a real, tangible person. But the door was locked, and both he and his wife had been in the front garden working the entire time Heidi had been attacked. Still, Andy searched the house inside and out, walking around the property numerous times and traversing the neighborhood. He told Heidi she must have had a bad dream, but the little girl was not convinced. She told her parents she couldn't see the man's face. 1 week later, Heidi awoke in the middle of the night, her sobs waking her mother. Heidi complained that her face hurt, and Lisa was shocked to discover that her daughter had three long scratches resembling claw marks down one cheek. Dots of blood swelled to the surface of the wound, just below her right eye. Lisa called for Andy in panic, and confused, the parents took their little girl to the bathroom and tended to her wounds. Heidi slept between her parents that night, but neither Lisa nor Andy slept a wink. The two talked over breakfast the following morning, baffled by the bizarre events that had taken place since they'd moved in. Lisa recalled how when Heidi was just 2.5, she had wandered into the walk-in closet. Lisa, who was speaking with Joyce at the time, as she cut her hair, didn't think much of it until the little girl was gone for some time. Lisa went to check on her, and Heidi explained that she was talking to a lady. When Lisa asked what the lady said, Heidi replied, "Nothing, she's dead." Lisa had brushed this incident aside at the time, thinking it was nothing more than weird and a bit creepy ramblings of a 2-year-old. But now she and her husband wondered if this was where it had all began. They also wondered how safe they were in their own house. Their question was answered just 1 week later, when Andy awoke to a sharp, intense pain in his back. Three deep, long scratches had appeared, drawing blood. Lisa cleaned up his wounds, and Andy began to insist that they sell the house and move. But Lisa knew that, realistically, they couldn't afford to do so, and there was nowhere for them to go. Their families didn't have the room to take them in, so for the time being, the family were trapped. Heidi continued to maintain her relationship with Mr. Gordy. She noted that he looked no different to her than anyone else, and to Lisa's dismay, nothing had come from discerning the elderly man's identity. Meanwhile, in 1992, Lisa suffered from 2 miscarriages, and in 1993 fell pregnant again. Heidi wanted to call the baby Jordan after a character in one of her books, and her parents agreed. One day in 1993, Heidi was putting away her books in her room when she noticed a shadow out of the corner of her eye. She called out to Mr. Gordy, but her gaze fell on a cloaked, shadowy figure standing just inside her closet. Lisa was in her second trimester of pregnancy and scrambled to her feet when she heard Heidi's screams. Moments later, her daughter appeared in the living room and screamed that there was a man in her closet. Lisa, in no fit state to take on an intruder, dialed her sister's phone number, knowing she had access to a gun. Joyce entered from the back room, armed with a revolver. Tailed by Heidi and Lisa, Joyce crept into the little girl's room and made her way to the closet, but breathed a sigh of relief when she saw it was empty. Heidi, however, was adamant that she'd seen somebody, a dark figure who radiated evil. She noted that she was so scared because he wouldn't let her see his face, unlike any other individual she'd come across. The family spent the rest of the day at Joyce's house. But over the months, danger and unexplained phenomena continued to lurk. Things would disappear and reappear. Kitchen cabinet doors would be found open at odd times of day. The kitchen tap would turn on full blast. In one instance, a chair moved from beneath the dining room table and moved around to face the living room, in which the family sat. While many would put this down to paranormal activity, Lisa believed a real human was toying with the family to put them on edge and cause chaos and distress. Andy told his father-in-law, "I sleep every night with one eye closed and one eye looking down the hallway." Heidi referred to the unfamiliar individual as the dark figure. He frequented the home and wanted to harm the family, but the one thing they couldn't figure out was why. Jordan, Heidi's sister, was born on February 3rd, 1994. By this time, activity in the household had quietened down. The dark entity had made itself scarce, but the family's relief was only temporary. Joyce's daughter Nikki babysat for the Wyricks, one night just months after her birth. After putting Jordan down for bedtime, Nikki went to the living room and fell asleep on the sofa. She awoke 20 minutes later to the sound of the baby whimpering. Inside her cot, the baby had a length of ribbon wrapped around her throat. Nikki bundled the baby in a blanket and fled to Joyce's house, who managed to free the baby's neck with a tiny pair of nail scissors. There were no other marks or bruises on Jordan's body, and nobody could explain where the ribbon came from or how it wound itself around the baby's throat. It was around this time that the family finally learned who Con was after Heidi picked him out from a stack of photographs a neighbor had loaned them. The old and faded image featured five men, but Heidi knew Con right away. Con was the uncle of a former resident of the house, a woman by the name of Catherine Ledford. Her uncle, Lon Con Batchelor, died of cancer in 1957, but lost his hand in a cotton engine before he was 20 years old in Ellerslie. After his hand was amputated, he'd returned home still wearing his bloodied clothing and the red-covered bandages. Following this discovery, Lisa and Andy turned to someone they hoped would finally be able to give them answers and help. They reached out to Dr. William Roll, a parapsychologist at the University of Georgia. There had to be an explanation for all of this, they thought. And there had to be a way to end it. Dr. William Roll was born in Bremen, Germany in 1926. He moved to Denmark with his mother after his parents divorced in 1929, and it was here that he began having out-of-body experiences. In 1946, he moved to America with his father and began studying at the University of California, Berkeley, a year later. He majored in philosophy and psychology, and a year after he graduated, he attended Oxford University, where he did parapsychology research for 8 years. Over the years, Roll made his name as a parapsychologist. He wrote and co-wrote many articles and research papers, as well as 4 books, and made numerous appearances on the popular TV show Unsolved Mysteries. He was no stranger to the paranormal, and was keen to begin investigating Heidi's case right away. Roll arrived just days after Lisa had contacted him. He had the family sit around the dining table and produced a tape recorder, pen, and notebook from his briefcase. Over the course of 2 hours, he questioned Heidi, Lisa, and Andy. Heidi, now 8, was clear and consistent with her answers. There were no signs of mental illness, nor did he feel she was simply a child with an overactive imagination. He visited her 2 more times over the next month. At their next appointment, Roll brought a film crew and a shoebox full of old photographs he'd been given by Mr. Gordy's family. He told Heidi to set aside photographs of people she recognized. She recognized 2 images of Mr. Gordy, and Rolls confirmed that she was correct. He fully believed her when she said she knew and spoke to Mr. Gordy and Con. Roll was still keen to research the home and Heidi's abilities, and placed electromagnetic field meters throughout the house. He hoped he would be able to record the activity of any spirits in the house this way. The following day, he collected them and was delighted at the height levels the meters had recorded. He then brought in psychics to get a feel for the house. They were unable to discuss their abilities with one another and would only meet the family afterwards. Roll did not want to skewer the results. One of the psychics flat out refused to enter the house, noting the presence of an evil, demonic being. The other psychic entered, but immediately became fearful. She noticed the presence too, and pointed out that it was cunning and would not hesitate to cause harm. Both psychics, who came to the home individually, stated that the chimney where Heidi often played as a child and was reportedly enthralled by was a gateway which spirits used to traverse between worlds. Both psychics claimed to have seen a young girl, an apparition, playing outside the home, which was most unusual, as spirits were generally bound to indoor areas. Roll returned home to conduct a research paper on the case, leaving the family with the idea that Heidi may never outgrow her abilities. She had been communicating with the dead for over 6 years now. It seemed unlikely that she would be able to shed her so-called gift, a notion that caused Lisa great distress. At the heart of it, Dr. Roll was a scientist, and as such, reached a scientific conclusion to explain what Heidi was experiencing. He believed the couple's house had been built on a fault line. The fault line meant the Earth's magnetic field is very strong, which in turn meant that spirits were more active. He also added his belief that radon gas would be escaping from the ground and seeping through the floorboards, which may trigger the sightings Heidi was experiencing. This was not necessarily the response that the Wyricks had been hoping for, because at the end of the day, the family still couldn't afford to move. This left them disappointed and exhausted. Furthermore, with Roll's involvement in the case came media attention, especially when the Wyricks agreed to give a national television show permission to air their story. While paranormal activity was at a low, the house was still buzzing with life. A constant stream of letters, phone calls, and visitors became part of the Wyricks' daily routine. They had become celebrities overnight, but were simply there for entertainment. Nobody reached out to help them leave behind their life, which had been turned into a nightmare. Lisa began to believe that only prayer would save the family and their home. The Wyricks continued to be subjected to strange occurrences once Dr. Roll finished conducting his research. In one instance at 3 a.m, Heidi heard the doorbell go. However, when Andy answered it, there was no one there. In another, Lisa began to do her makeup when Wolf began to growl. As she listened to the dog, she was met with the stench of death. The smell of decaying animal flesh assaulted her nostrils. Wolf, who appeared to be under the house, having crept in from beneath the decking, began to frantically bark when a woman's voice shushed the canine. Lisa froze, wondering how or why someone would be underneath the house at this time in the morning. It was around 5 a.m. She checked the crawl space beneath the house, shining a torch into the darkness, but found nothing. At one point, Heidi's grandfather witnessed her being pulled by invisible hands by her ponytail before she was eventually released. Around this same time, her claustrophobic grandmother was locked in the bathroom by unseen forces. One other notable event which occurred was when Lisa returned home with Jordan from daycare. She put the young child in her room and began to hoover, but noticed, stepping inside Jordan's room, that it was much cooler than the rest of the house. A moment later, an apparition appeared. It moved from the closet to the bed. Lisa, unable to move, watched as the figure of a woman moved closer to Jordan's bed before it vanished. It seemed that praying alone was not enough for the family. One Sunday, the Wyricks attended church. They asked Brother Shep and Brother Fred for help. The men replied that it sounded like the family was under demonic attack. The preachers performed a prayer at the house before going on to exorcise it. They prayed further until eventually they stated that they believed the house was clean. Brother Shep told them, "I do not feel the resistance I felt when I arrived." The family were relieved that finally it was all over. Despite the best efforts of Brother Shep and Brother Fred, the Wyricks were still haunted by odd goings-on after the exorcism attempt. Heidi's abilities never diminished over time, but she learned to cope with them better. The family had spent years desperate to move, but financially unable to do so, crippled under the weight of hospital bills. Over the years, they were subjected to all sorts of illnesses. Jordan was hospitalized 10 times for her asthma, Heidi 3 times, finally undergoing surgery after her appendix ruptured. Andy had gone through 3 major surgeries, and as previously mentioned, Lisa suffered 2 miscarriages. The crushing medical payments made them unable to leave the home they despised, the home they believed was trying to kill them. It was only when Heidi hit her mid-teens that the family packed up their belongings and began renting another property, a new build which still smelled of fresh paint. The family moved again shortly afterwards to a bigger rental property. However, as soon as they settled in, Heidi announced that she hated it there, that there was an evil living on the property. They slowly realized that perhaps it was not Swint Loop that was the problem after all, but that the family had become magnets for disagreeable spirits. The cycle started again. The Wyricks were awoken in the middle of the night by banging. Items were displaced, and their doors would be wide open when they returned from running errands. Heidi would often see strangers in the reflection of the mirror, and was frequently haunted by the spirit with no face. Over the years, Heidi's story has been the focus of a Discovery Channel documentary called A Haunting in Georgia, as well as an episode of Unsolved Mysteries and a book. Heidi continues to see entities, although she no longer sees Mr. Gordy. She does, however, still see the shadowy figure. After high school, Heidi married her sweetheart, Aaron, and began a career in the medical field. The couple relocated from Harris County to Columbus. Her father, Andy, died in 2012, at the age of just 45. Dr. William Rawl stated he believed Heidi gained her so-called psychic powers because she was so close to death after birth. She was born a month early with her umbilical cord wrapped around her neck twice, but still she beat the odds, surviving and going on to become a very intelligent and keen-eyed young person. To this day, it's unclear what happened to the Wyrick family. Were they truly haunted? Did they succumb to hysteria? Or was it all fabricated? Many have wondered why Heidi, a three-year-old child, was the one that the so-called spirits were drawn to. Why would grown deceased humans want to speak with a toddler? Were the poltergeist attacks described by the family real? Or were they manifested in some way by Heidi's alleged abilities? The bizarre case of the Wyrick family leaves more questions than answers, and is still heavily debated to this day.